This podcast is a part of Dear Asian Youth, a youth-led magazine aimed towards Asian activism for Asian youth by Asian youth. Follow us on all platforms, Instagram, Twitter, and more at Dear Asian Youth to get all the updates on the latest articles, poetry, prose, podcasts, campaigns, and more.
Dear Asian Girl, a podcast dedicated to uplift and share Asian girl stories everywhere. Today, our co-host, Jen, will be talking about food appropriation with our special guest, Olivia Stark.
All right. Hello, everyone. We hope you are doing well and that you enjoyed our last episode. My name is Alina, and I'm here with Jen. We are your hosts for Dear Asian Girl. And today we are going to be talking about food appropriation regarding the Asian cuisine, and we cannot wait to get started.
There's so many topics and everything we need to talk about, but one thing that we definitely want to start focusing on is our personal experiences so that we can relate to our viewers out there, our audience that are listening or watching, like on the video that we have now, which is really cool, actually. I like that idea. So yeah. Do you have like your personal experiences in school or outside of school in which you've ever been like ashamed of the food that you ate outside or like felt like you saw something that was like culturally appropriated in your area?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So for me, I know like I started going to an online school in seventh grade, but my experiences prior to that at like the lunch table was not very fun. And I'm sure like anyone who's been to a public school, middle school, high school, you know, the lunch table's like, you're chill, fun, enjoying time, yep. You know, right? Like, so yeah, I'm setting the scene for all the people listening. You're like in the 2010s, right? You're like excited for lunch. Like, let's get to Eden, right?
You're not in the peanut free nice alley.
Gonna go to the microwave, the white person next to you warming up their pizza. You know how
you had a microwave?
Okay. yeah, our middle school had a microwave.
We didn't have
a microwave.
Is that not
normal?
No, I literally had cold Filipino food.
That's so horrible. Okay, and yeah. I thought like, wow, and I thought Idaho's school system was like not up to par. Mm. I guess we had microwaves, which is
no,
great.
The thing is, I would have to persuade my teachers in order for me to like get food in the microwave because it was in the teacher's lounge, and
oh,
I would just like
buddy
up to them. I'd be like, hey, I can do like an extra assignment if you just like put the food in my microwave.
I like how that's like, wow, just fun middle school experiences. Yeah. Yeah, so I guess scraps the microwave. You're just getting ready for lunch, right? And you pull out, this is my experience. I pull out this like wonderful South Asian dish that my mom made. Like my favorite is biryani, and that's like a rice dish with like chicken and like spices. It's very good. It's the only thing that like, it's the one thing that's like a comfort food for me.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
For sure.
I'm pretty whitewashed myself, but that's like the most
me too.
My most favorite thing about South Asian culture is the biryani. Anyway, I pull it out, right, and obviously we get that classic reaction of the girl next to you. Like, her name's probably like Emily or something, no offense to all the Emilys out there, and she's like, ew, what is that, you know what I mean? Like, she's like, oh, gross, like, why does it smell like that, you know?
Yeah.
That's just my classic experience, and it's kind of frustrating to think of like that happening and fast forward like a couple years later, and now it's like trendy to like Indian food or Pakistani food, and I'm just like, okay, whatever. But anyway,
for sure, it's like y'all were complaining about the smell but then loving it the next day.
Yeah, like,
girls, any sense. That happened to me a few times. That happened to me in the lunchroom where I had kare kare, and it's one of my favorite Filipino dishes of all time, but it smells. I'm going to say that out loud. It smells, but it's so good. And I'm sitting down, like, maybe with, like, a few of my friends and stuff, and then I open it, and the one girl from, like, the other side of the table, not even, like, on my side, she's like, what is that? Why is it, like, brown, and why is there so many vegetables on there? I'm like, you literally have a sandwich with peanut butter and jelly. Calm down. And then there was another thing. You know, Starbucks has the new matcha drink and all that stuff. And, oh my goodness. Literally, maybe 3 years ago, I bought one myself. And then this one girl goodness, she literally said, why does that look like something Shrek would drink?
What?
Yeah.
Do not call Shrek. Shrek is an icon.
Shrek is love. Shrek is life.
Shrek is life. Shrek is literally, that movie is like, beautiful.
It is a cinematic masterpiece.
Best.
Anyone can prove me wrong. It only has like 90% Rotten Tomatoes last time I checked. For sure.
Rightfully so. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And then now fast forward to like the TikTok culture now. You can see, like, all these girls are like, oh my goodness, matcha is just so good for your body, and it's just such a good drink, and it's so... I'm like, what? Y'all were making fun of me for having this green drink, like, 3 years ago.
Funny how the tables have turned. No, I, like, I agree. Like, I see that was, like, chai. Like, I don't... Personally, when I was younger, I didn't really drink chai anyway. Like, I mean, I was, like... 12, I didn't really have any reason to be drinking it, but, like, as you mentioned, like, with matcha and, like, with boba, like, these things become trends that, like, I feel like a lot of society easily picks up to, like, profit off of without giving, like, credit where it belongs, and I'm, like, anyone can, like, enjoy South Asian culture, like, Asian culture in general, cuisine, like, that's totally fine, but it's about, like, understanding where it comes from and, like, definitely, like I guess giving credit to where this like cuisine like comes from, because like for as myself, like as an Asian girl, like my culture, specifically my food, is such a large part of my identity. As I mentioned, I am a pretty whitewashed Asian, but like I like Asian cuisine is such a huge part of me. Like I would grow up eating like biryani, grow up eating like butter chicken, like all these like meals that my parents would make for me and my grandma would make, like all these recipes are passed down, like things like that. So it's like a huge part of my culture. And same with like chai, like I was mentioning, my grandpa, from my mom's dad, he makes like the best chai, like and like we enjoy, we have it together. Yeah, and like it's so nice to have this like experience with my family, but then to go to like Starbucks and like see they're selling it, like iced chai latte, like if I'm being honest, like I always drink iced chai, like it's really bad, so
really
I am definitely at fault. Yeah, I am definitely at fault, but I don't know, I just think it's like without respecting the culture, you can't profit off of it, like if it's not yours especially.
Yeah, Alina, I completely agree with that. There's a big difference between appreciating a culture versus appropriating a culture, especially in America where we are built upon capitalism and just feeding off of a culture's profit and like what they have made or identified as their own culture. Because as you said, like food is directly linked to a like a culture's identity, it's linked to a heritage, it's linked to a person in general. And especially for like first gen, second gen immigrants who have been assimilated to this whitewashed culture surrounded by burgers and fries and all these fast foods, it's nice to be at home or like outside and having this food being your one core identity to yourself and only something that you can keep to yourself. And that's something that I guess people just need to emphasize on how, like, especially Asians are angry about that if we are being appropriated by like whitewash companies that profit off of our like food, especially if they made fun of us before.
No, I completely agree. And like what you mentioned about like homemade food and how it like kind of resonates different with like Asian youth and any minority in general, like or immigrant, anyone coming from an immigrant family, like for me, I know like if I eat out too many times like a week or whatever, I start feeling sick and I'm like, I need home cooked food. Like, I need my mom to make like something for me. And that's such a like, that's a privilege to have that for sure. But it's like, that has such a, like having that connection with like Asian cuisine, South Asian Pakistani food is like it's so close to my heart to have that. Same. So for someone, for like the girl next door to go and profit off of that and like not even like give credit to the culture that they're taking it from and just straight up like profiting off of it and like whitewashing it is like really frustrating to me. And I guess it's like important to recognize that like anyone can appreciate different cuisines. You can make it yourself. Like it's, I definitely encourage that, honestly. Like I encourage people to go out of their way and like make other cuisines that are outside of their like ethnic group. Like, I definitely encourage that, but it's different to, like, as you mentioned, appropriate it and like appreciate it. So I definitely agree with you.
Yeah. It's kind of like a kid trying broccoli for the first time. Does that make sense? Where they're like, I don't know if you've seen Inside Out, where the girl just like takes a broccoli and she's like, ew, gross. That was kind of like how like kids in my grade would have like show off like matcha or anything, or like any Filipino food. But then years later, it's good to really just appreciate culture in general and go step out of your way to try all these different foods and stuff. But there's, as I said, there's just a huge difference between, I guess, not giving credit for what is due, like what you said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, I like that you mentioned that too. Like, give an example of that. Like, I am TikTok obsessed.
Yep.
And I have fallen down food TikTok. I've had my For You page sometimes becomes food TikTok, right?
Wait, oh, okay.
Yeah, and I came, I promise I'm going somewhere. I promise I'm not crazy. And I came across this one account of this, I think he's Jewish, this Jewish boy. His name's, let me find his, like, account. His name's, like, Eaton, I think. And, like, he makes, like, Indian food and South Asian cuisine. And I think that's a great example of, like, appreciation. Because, it's just Eaton on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a good example of, like, appreciation of a culture, because he makes the cuisine and he explains, like, how he makes it, and he explains, like history of it. So he's, like, actively appreciating the cuisine and not profiting off of it, because he gets views for these, he gets likes for these, he gets a lot of support from the brown community, and he could easily just, like, disregard where it's come from and the roots of the food that he's making, but he actively, like, goes against that and, like, shows, like, what region he's making, like, the food from. So, like, that's, like, one prime example of, like, appreciating someone else's culture, specifically their cuisine, because as we both mentioned, like, food is such a, like, integrated part of, like, our culture and, like, our identity. So it's just, I don't know, it's just very important to know the difference.
Yeah, and personally, in my experience, because it's, especially growing up here in America, there has been opportunities in which I just haven't been able to really connect with my culture, especially. So food is kind of like that only link between the Philippines and America and the town that I live in, because I can't really speak the language, and I've been trying to, and I look like I look different from most Filipinos as well, so it's kind of hard to find, like, a way to really embrace my culture and my identity. So having, like, when I do visit there, having food, like, Filipino food is, like, that one thing that connects us all together, and I bet you've had similar experiences too.
Yeah. No, like, when you said that, I was, like, thinking about my own experiences with that. Like you said, I don't really look like any of the other Pakistani people when I went to visit Pakistan. Like, I don't, like, people automatically are, like, okay, she's definitely from, like, America. Like, yeah, they know, like, same. The Pakistani people.
Mm-hmm.
And I never visited Pakistan up until last winter. So in all my, like, 15, I'm 16 now. All my 15 years of living, I've never visited Pakistan. Like, I didn't, like, ever, I've never gone there, but it's been such a large part of who I am. Because I actively try to be proud of my identity, but visiting there, like, as you mentioned, like, the food is just one large, like almost the only connection that you have while living in, like, America, separate from the country itself. And I completely agree. Like, I do speak Urdu, but, like, I'm not very good at it.
Yeah.
Like, if I try, like, it's really bad. Anyway, so I don't really look like any of the other, like, local people in Pakistan. But, like, as you mentioned, like, the food is what really connects me with that, because that's been the one consistent thing in my life, in regards to, like, my identity and who I am. So I completely agree. I think that's, like, a very important thing that you brought up.
Another thing to point out is how, I guess, Americanized, like, especially Chinese food and basically all Chinese restaurants or anything in general, like, any Asian restaurant has become so Americanized. And then there has become, like, these white owners that own Chinese restaurants and make themselves seem so, I guess, not appropriating the culture at all, but making themselves appear better than like a Chinese restaurant that is Chinese run, Chinese owned, and more. Mm-hmm. Which kind of leads to like what we were gonna be talking about, like white Chinese food. Do you have anything to say about that?
So I'm not like extremely familiar with like specifically East Asian cuisine and like in regards to like appropriating that, but I definitely see it myself. Like the other day I went to an East Asian cuisine restaurant, and you can automatically tell when something is like authentic and when something is like run by a white person trying to get money off of it. It was a great experience, great restaurant, but like I started having this discussion with my mom, and we were like, oh, like, are there any, like, desserts, or, like, what's here on the menu? And, like, I realized that, like, the reason why I've never had a true, authentic with trying East Asian cuisine is because I haven't gone to places that are authentic. The reason why I've never had, like, an authentic East Asian dessert or, like, meal is because I've only gone to, like, gentrified, like, areas and, like, whitewashed areas in new restaurants. And, like, that's partially my fault for not going out to seek those. But I also think the restaurant, like, community does have a certain job to make sure they actively, like, I guess, appreciate the culture and, like, actively encourage people to learn more about the cuisine that they're, like, eating at the restaurant. Like, I totally agree. And I've had my own experiences with that. So I definitely need to do better as, like, a consumer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm bringing this up. I was watching Guy Fieri.
Yes, my king.
I'm gonna hate it. But I think, like, it was somewhere in Texas, and he was interviewing this one dude, and he was doing, like, he had a restaurant, it was a cuisine of barbecue x sushi, and...
Interesting.
I don't know, like, I thought it was just, like, weird how... It was also a white-owned person, and he was getting so much recognition, like, he was on Guy Fieri, but I have not seen any Asian person on Guy Fieri's, like, show at all, like, just specifically for their brand, and I just, that just goes to show how, I guess, whitewashed our culture is, and how white people can just take the food that we do appreciate, and just twist it, and make it better, and everyone, like, likes it better. I don't know if that makes sense at all.
No, I actually, when you mentioned that, something else came to my mind. It's kind of like how with, like, this is, like, a more general aspect of activism, but, like, it's, like, white people who are, like, trying to be allies need to hear it coming from a white person's mouth in order to actively, like, engage with that subject, if that makes sense. I feel like that's kind of similar with, like the food, like, cuisine and food in general. Like, someone would go about, like, wanting to appreciate Asian, like, East Asian culture, South Asian culture, cuisine, but they would only do so if it comes from another white person, like, catering it to them. Does that make sense? I think that's kind of, like, an interesting connection. But, yeah, like, that's, no, honestly, Guy Fieri, he's a king, but, like, he needs to do better.
I know.
Get some proper representation up here.
There's also, it's funny how you brought up, like, you know when something's authentic, because we have a Chinatown in Chicago, and so you would just walk down Chinatown, and you would see which stores are the ones that, like, white people go to, and the ones that, like, all Asians go to, because you know, they know the authentic food, and they know which ones are really, really good, and I just found that really funny, just seeing, like, walking down, and you just see, like, people with, like, their orange chicken from, like, Panda Express, and they think, like, oh, I'm so cultured, and I have this, like,
I'm so cultured. We love that. I guess we can talk about more specific examples.
So we can start talking about, I guess, white Chinese food. And then apparently it was part of the idea that Chinese food is dirty and cheap, and it also came with the Immigration and Naturalization Act being passed in 1965, as a wave of Chinese immigrants came over to America. So not only were they seen as dirty and cheap, but also their Chinese food was as well. Which I found really interesting, because even today, because I remember I was reading this article maybe last year, and it was something on Lucky Lee's, and it was a Chinese restaurant owned by a Jewish American couple, and they were basically talking about how Chinese, like their Chinese food specifically, was clean and like super much better for like people because it didn't leave their customers feeling icky and gross the next day. And they even went out of their own way to say that these are the very few American Chinese places that are mindful about the quality of ingredients as we are. And then I remember I checked Twitter and there was so much backlash on the media.
Yeah, rightfully so. What are they talking about?
They were like saying like, they were calling it like racist language and a cultural appropriation and lack of understanding. And there was just so much stuff going on about that. And I remember like they issued an apology. And since then, they took that statement down, and I think they also took down, like, the fact that they called it icky and gross, but I don't know for sure if they shut down. I hope they did, because there's a fine line of saying, like, oh, we're just, like, using these sort of ingredients to kind of change it up, instead of saying, like, oh, this is icky and gross, because that is racist. That is racist for, and, like, deconnotating, like, what Chinese food is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you said it was like a Chinese restaurant that was owned by like a Jewish couple?
Yeah, it was like a Jewish American couple.
Like, so the fact that they're like, oh, our food isn't dirty, like it's like clean. Like, what the fuck do you mean it's clean? Like, what?
What is the definition of clean? Like, give us the ingredients, let us know. Like,
clean. Like, do you sanitize every single one of your like fucking like leaves or whatever that you put in that shit?
Sanitizer like, no. And everything.
Yeah, like,
you were COVID over here.
But yeah, no, like, what I was going to say is, like, by people, like, see, like, this feeds to stereotypes, like, that, like, certain racial groups face. Like, I'm sure, like, East Asians get the racial stereotype that, oh, they eat weird stuff. Like, I mean, with the whole corona thing, people are like, oh, they eat bats and shit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's so fucked up. And I feel like, by having these restaurant owners say that, oh, our food is, like, clean compared to traditional Chinese food, which is dirty, like, feeds to that stereotype and feeds to normalizing this idea, this messed up idea that East Asian people, like, eat dirty stuff, which is, like, completely, like, not true. I feel like Asian culture specifically is one of the, like, is one of those specific, like, cultures that actually, like, really stresses the importance of, like, hygienic and like being clean and like cleanliness. Mm-hmm. Like I like South Asian culture, like we really stress the importance of being clean.
Exactly.
And I'm sure with East Asian culture it's the same thing. I mean, okay, again, all my information from TikTok. I was looking at this TikTok and it was talking about how in fact the European settlers who colonized the United States never like took baths. Like they didn't believe in like showers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Native American people would clean themselves all the time. They're very hygienic. So it's, like, interesting to see how this, like, idea has been flipped by, like, media and, like, the way people, like, perpetuate these stereotypes onto racial groups when it's, like, completely the opposite.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. That's, like, really messed up. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, I remember reading the article last year, and I was like, you're kidding. There's no way they could have said that. Which is kind of cool that you mentioned that, Alina, because we're going to segue into our interview with Olivia Stark. Olivia Stark is one of our core writers here at The Day Team, and we are so excited to have her be on this podcast to talk about food appropriation because she recently graduated from UCLA as a Asian American Studies major. So I think it'd be really cool and insightful to see someone who does have a major on this type of stuff, see how food appropriation is in America and how we can uplift each other and empower each other to not shy away from our culture but embrace it. So here's our interview with Olivia Stark. Okay, so I'm here with Olivia Stark. Do you want to like introduce yourself and what you do at like the Day Team?
Sure. I'm Olivia. I was born and raised in Los Angeles and recently graduated from UCLA with a bachelor's degree in Asian American Studies. And now I am writing for the Day Team and I write articles mostly about food every couple weeks.
That's really, really cool. So you graduated from UCLA. How was that? Like, how was that whole experience? Did you like it?
It was amazing. I never pictured myself at a school, one, so close to home, mm-hmm. or two, as big as UCLA, because it's, like, a huge university, and I was worried because people say, like, oh, at UCLA, you know, you're just a number because yeah. there's so many students. But I feel like in the Asian American Studies department, I really found that small community that I was looking for and really developed meaningful relationships with all of my classmates and professors.
Wow, that's awesome. Because I was thinking about UCLA because I'm like a rising senior. So that's...
Maybe you have me.
Yes.
If you ever want to talk about it.
That's awesome. Because I'm like curious on the campus because I was actually going to go to California maybe a week ago, I think, and I was gonna actually visit UCLA and the campus, but now, like, you know, yeah, COVID is just not it.
Well, it's a really beautiful campus, so I could tell you that much.
Yeah. Okay, so in your article on Dear Asian Youth, Jook, you mentioned how kanji has been prevalent in Asian culture since forever because it was a way to stretch a meal when there wasn't enough food around. What is the significance of kanji to you and your family, and how does it continue to be a generational dish for years to come?
Yeah, well, for my family, I mean, I always saw it as... something I didn't even really like that much. I was like, oh, this is just something, you know, my family makes out of leftovers. But it was always there for every holiday because holidays are usually when we'll have some kind of big meal that has leftovers, mm-hmm. Like a leftover turkey. And so then that's when you're able to make joke because you can make it out of whatever you have left over. And so over the years, I grew to kind of appreciate it more and really associate it with family, just because it was always there when we had big groups of family over, and we would always eat it after holidays. It was also my little sister's first food that she would even eat, have memories of, like, feeding it to her when she was a baby. I mean, I was pretty much a baby, too, but it's always, like, kind of the first food that babies eat in our family. So, you know, everyone just grows up with it.
Yeah. Okay. So another question that I have for you is, how has food to you become your identity and identity for many Asian cultures?
I think for me, I grew up in a community where it was mostly white. I was the only Asian people I knew at my school growing up. There were maybe like two other Asian kids in my grade, K through 12. And so I started noticing when I got to kindergarten, like, that I would bring different types of foods to school for lunch than my peers. Yeah. When you're a kid, grew up until I went to kindergarten, you know, I assumed, like, oh, everyone must eat these things because I eat them. And then it wasn't until I got, like, started school that people started asking me, like, what is that? When I would bring, like, dumplings or lapcheng and rice, like Chinese sausage. And so I think that's where I really started developing a cultural identity around food, is growing up noticing that my foods were different than other people's. And it wasn't even necessarily that kids at school would make fun of me for my food, which I know a lot of people do have that experience, but more that they were just curious about my food. And it caused me to just realize that I was different from my peers in a way. Not only that, but I think beyond that, it has contributed to my cultural identity just in the role that food plays in our lives. So there are just certain foods, like I said about joke, that like I associate with spending time with my family.
Yeah.
Like at Christmas, my aunt always comes to visit us and we all make pot stickers together. And that's something that's special because she doesn't speak English and I don't speak any Chinese, but this is still something that we can communicate over and bond over, is like the making of Chinese food. So there's just a lot of, I guess, family associations related to food that connect you to kind of your roots and where you come from.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was talking with Alina earlier about like how food is linked to our identity, and how, like, especially since growing up here in America, you were kind of forced to be in a whitewashed culture where you weren't surrounded by all these foods as your sort of identity. And especially going out to like the mainland and stuff, to your home country, in which you do identify with these certain types of foods, that's like the only way you can really connect with your cousins or your relatives, especially if you can't speak the language, which I've had struggles with too. And because I don't know, just growing up here, it's just been hard to like really adapt into my culture.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
So another question I have for you is, so Alina and I were talking about food appropriation. So when addressing food appropriation and Americanized Asian food, how do we as Asian girls address that and confront it? So basically your advice on that.
I'd say I had a very unique experience growing up where I actually have another article that's about to come out about this. Mm-hmm. But there's a restaurant called Din Tai Fung. It's really famous. Mm-hmm. And they have xiaolongbao. That's their most famous dish, which is like a juicy pork dumpling from Taiwan. And I grew up always eating at this restaurant before it kind of like hit mainstream America, back when there was only one U.S. location in Arcadia, which is like a predominantly Asian area. Mm-hmm. In California. But then they started opening new locations in like wider areas like Glendale and now Century City, which is right by UCLA. So I was actually pretty excited that it opened there.
Yeah.
But it is a predominantly white area. And it was clear that they were trying to serve a predominantly white clientele at that point in their business model. And growing up with this kind of shift in this one restaurant that I noticed, and seeing kind of peers from my white community at my high school that I grew up with suddenly like discovering this food, and thinking like, oh, I just discovered this new like authentic food. It's so trendy to like dumplings. There was just something very off-putting about that for me, that I couldn't really verbalize what it was that was bothering me so much. But I was like, I've grown up with this food, and all of a sudden it's like a trend that all of my white friends are. Mm-hmm. Suddenly want to like jump on this train. And I think that speaks a lot to like food gentrification and appropriation, because as these restaurants start to ignore the Asian American communities that they were originally meant to serve, mm-hmm. and instead start kind of capitalizing off of this interest that white people have in kind of adopting Asian cultures, and that includes Asian cuisine, it kind of ignores the communities that they once served in an effort to, I guess, capitalize off of this appropriation. So I think one way, I mean, for me, a lot of the work was just kind of putting this all together in my head, because like I said, it was just kind of something that felt uncomfortable to me, but I hadn't explored much theoretically. And so once I went to college and I started taking Asian American studies classes, this was something that I thought maybe I should explore more. So I actually did research about Din Tai Fung and wrote a research paper and presentation about Din Tai Fung and the evolution of the restaurant. And then there was also a class that I took that was all about Asian American history through food.
Wow.
So there we talked about stuff like, there's a really popular taco truck in Los Angeles called the Kogi truck.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
It's like Korean Mexican fusion. And the point of us talking about that was kind of, you know, Asian people appropriate food as well, because this Korean chef has kind of taken Korean barbecue and foods from his culture and made it into a taco, which is Mexican food, and kind of capitalized off of that. Yeah. And now it's a very trendy food truck. But he doesn't really give credit to like the Mexican American community, like you should, especially in LA. And so it's really everywhere. And I think the first step is just kind of like addressing it, looking at these different places and realizing, like kind of what's happening here and sitting with that discomfort and thinking, why does this make me bothered that white people are eating at Din Tai Fung or that this Korean guy is selling street tacos? Why does that feel wrong? And what is it that we can do as, you know, we enter adulthood and maybe, you know, start our own restaurants and businesses to kind of do things differently?
Should we be like angry about it, or should we just like address it and then somehow find like a resolution to it? Or
I would say, upon first learning about it, I felt kind of angry about it. But at the same time, there's just so much to be angry about. And if you kind of look at all the systems, it is the systems of like capitalism that are keeping this going. So I even mention in my article that's coming up that I don't even really blame my white peers, because, you know, if I was a like white person and like I suddenly Din Tai Fung like popped up in my neighborhood and it's good, you can't really say like, oh, white people aren't allowed to enjoy this food. And
yeah, exactly.
But there are these greater systems that, because Din Tai Fung obviously was moving to cater to white communities, and there's a reason for that, is because that's where the money is. And any business in America is just trying to grow and make more money. It's really just about the systems we live in. So I think to be angry about it and to be, look at the larger systems at play that are, sorry, my dog keeps like deciding he wants to come in here. But yeah, you have to like look at the larger systems that are creating these problems and kind of address it from there.
Yeah, that's really good advice, actually, because personally I've always felt like super angry about it, and I've always been like, why is this a trend now? I was like obsessed with it maybe like all my life, and then you're pinning me down for it or something like that. Especially matcha. I don't know if you are really into like TikTok, but you've seen like all the people like just realizing that matcha is now a thing. And what are your thoughts on that?
No, yeah, I definitely think it's fair to be angry about it, and that people do have a responsibility that if you're going to do something like make a like matcha TikTok, or I would personally be so angry if I saw a TikTok of a white person like teaching me how to make dumplings.
Yes.
So I think that people should just in general be more conscious of like where they're borrowing things from. And if they're from other cultures, like, that's fine. Like, teach people how to make Asian foods on TikTok. But like, the cultures that these foods are coming from, don't act like you're the one who just all of a sudden discovered this and is making it a thing, you know?
Okay. Our last question is, do you have any advice just as, like, a Dear Asian Girl type of thing?
I would say, I should have thought of this before. About, like, food appropriation, specifically?
Or it could be about anything.
I guess I'll make it about food, since that's, like, my thing. I would say, for young Asian girls, this is advice that I would have liked to hear. Just be proud of your food and the food from your culture and the food that you make with your families, even if it's different than the food that, you know, your peers eat. Just be proud of it, because, you know, one day people are going to be dealing something that was so close to your heart that you, you know, grew up feeling ashamed of. And you don't want to kind of wake up one day and see your culture as a trend all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And feel like so betrayed because you were ashamed of it all this time. I think instead just wear it on your sleeve loudly and proudly. And then when it does ultimately become appropriated, like it always does, you can say, look, I was here this whole time.
Yeah.
And
that's really, really good advice. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today.
This is awesome.
Yeah. So I just came back from talking to Olivia, and I'm so grateful that she was able to come onto the podcast and talk about Asian appropriation, considering how educated she is. I mean, she is from UCLA with a major in Asian American studies, which is so cool to have, like, an older person, like, tell us all these things, and it really makes me give a good perspective on my views on Asian appropriation and how I should deal with it, and she gave really, really good advice. But yeah, I'm happy with how the podcast went, because we talked about a lot of things. We talked about how food is a core link to our identity and how it shapes us as a person and our families. We talked about how the white culture sort of perpetrates our food and uses it as capitalism and profit benefit, and how it caters to only a certain clientele, which is white. And do you have anything else to add?
No, I mean, you kind of hit everything. I completely agree. Today's discussion was very fun. I am really hungry now, to say the least.
I can smell the food in my house right now, and I just really want some. So I'm probably going to go eat some of that food.
I probably will do the same. But yeah, like, with that being said, I guess I'll do a cute little outro. But Dear Asian Girl, be proud of your identity, and dear not Asian girl, do not appropriate off of someone's culture.
Yes.
that's all I have to say.
I'm just happy that we do have this platform that we can talk about things, because this is meant to empower girls and appreciate their culture and just not be ashamed of it. So dear Asian girl, just be proud of who you are and not be ashamed of anything that comes in your way, and embrace your culture and your family and your values. That's all I have to say. That was so cute.
I love it.
Want more of Dear Asian Girl? You can find us everywhere on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor. We're on everything. Can't get enough? Subscribe, follow, rate, review to get all the updates and the latest on DAG. Let us know your feedback and what we can do to improve. Want to be a part of the podcast or Dear Asian Youth? Go on dearasianyouth.org and click contact to be a part of the DAG and DAY team. We'd love to have more hosts. We have our own Instagram. Follow us at Dear Asian Girl to receive updates on all the latest episodes and fun fact about the hosts. We'd love for you to reach out. DAG, Dear Asian Girl, a podcast dedicated to uplift and share Asian girl stories everywhere. For the Asian girl, by the Asian girl. Logo by Kristen Huynh. Produced and edited by Genesis, and produced on Anchor.